Hi, I'm Rabbi Cece, and you're listening to Drinking and Droshing, Torah with a Twist. And I know we say L'chaim on this show, but also Sláinte.
Hey, Gabe.
Hey, Amanda.
What's got you smiling like that?
I just love Torah so much.
Really? I thought it was because we've just lived through a miracle. We're going to dance tonight.
Nice. We do love some Debbie Friedman.
And dancing. I mean, I hear that we're about to dance our way into like a brand new kind of complicated portion, but we might have a guest who's able to help us with all of that.
Really? There's a lot going on in this Torah portion. You think one person is going to be able to like really distill all of it into like something coherent for all of us?
Well, I mean, if we're just going to tap dance around it anyway, I'm going to say our guest is really, really good at making sure we take it step by step. Are you ready to join the dance?
Guess so.
Have you heard the word? Well, I mean, I guess it's going around that this huge miracle happened. I mean, huge. You see, in last week's portion, the Israelites, they made it across the Dead Sea to the Promised Land. Well, not quite to the Promised Land, but like they're on their way. They're really making their way there. It might take a little bit longer, say, but like, I don't know, a day, 2 days, maybe 40 years. Who's counting? Regardless, the news is spreading. And you know who has heard the word? Yitro. Yitro, who is Yitro? Well, we're about to find out. But it's an important name because that's who this parsha is completely named after. And I have to tell you, I'm already confused. Lucky for me and lucky for Gabe, and thanks to Idan, we have an incredible guest that's here tonight that's going to help us walk through a little bit of difficulty in how we manage the day-to-day after a miracle literally occurs in our backyard. I mean, our Red Sea. I mean, oh, well, it's a little confusing, but luckily for us, Rabbi Cece Beyer is here to help us save the day. Rabbi Cece Beyer serves as part of a two-rabbi team at Temple Shalom in Bridgewater, New Jersey. Rabbi Cece's rabbinate is a musical one, and in addition to pastoral duties and rabbinic teaching, she also leads all services, chants and teaches Torah and Haftarah, get excited for a new pocket Torah recording coming at you soon, tutors B-mitzvah students, teaches music to students of all ages, and leads both a choir and a middle school band called Shul of Rock, which, by the way, School of Rock, awesome, Shul of Rock must be even better. She is also the rabbi for Camp Zeke, a Jewish camp in the Poconos dedicated to fitness, culinary arts, and the connection of mind, body, and soul in Judaism. Rabbi Cece was a part of the founding family 10 years ago, crafting the Jewish identity of a camp whose highest value is kindness, where an attitude of gratitude is celebrated every day. Sounds like my type of camp. Rabbi Cece was ordained from the Jewish Theological Seminary in May 2010, where she pursued a concentration in sacred music as part of her studies. A Cherry Hill native, she's a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania and the George Washington University Law School. She's a graduate of Young Judea, has spent significant time living and working in Israel, and is a life member of Hadassah, including Young Judea Year Course in Israel. Rabbi Cece is also an accomplished singer, actor, and dancer. She's a classically trained soprano, a musical theater kid, and, you know, as you would have guessed, a competitive Irish step dancer. Rabbi Cece and her husband Gabe, not our Gabe, have three kitties, Minerva, Padfoot, and Mooney, and a rescue dog named Sandy. They're all huge Harry Potter, Disney, and Star Wars fans. Rabbi Cece, welcome to Drinking and Droshing, Torah with a Twist. We're so excited to have you on the show.
I'm so excited to be here.
Amazing. And as somebody who is also a fan of kitties and musical theater and trained sopranos and also Disney and also Star Wars and also Harry Potter, what's going on, Gabe Snyder?
All good. Better now that we're talking about all of my favorite things and Torah.
Yes, very exciting. Idan, if you had to pick a top out of this list, right? Musical theater, trained sopranos, competitive Irish step dancing, kittens, rescue dogs, Harry Potter, Disney, or Star Wars, what is your favorite go-to?
It's a tough list. It's tough. It's a tough pick. It's a tough pick. I'd say maybe Star Wars, maybe. Probably.
Maybe Star Wars. We won't tell Takiya. But it's okay.
Oh, and rescue dogs, obviously. you were reading through the list, and it's a long list. And I was like, oh, that one. Wait, no, that one. And then you got to the end, and I said Star Wars. And I forgot about the thing earlier that I was like, that one.
Got it. Star Wars and rescue dogs. No, it's great. Okay, we weren't trying to trick you, Don, but we're really excited that you're here. And we'll make sure that Takiya knows that, you know, she's still one of your favorites. Either way, as we said, we really do need a lot of guidance in this episode because it does seem that there's need for coaching, guidance, and mentorship in this particular parsha. And so we're so stoked to get started. Let's go.
Last week in Beshalach, we had a whole bunch of bitter bickering, but don't worry, in Parashat Yitro, we have even more complaining. Moses' father-in-law Yitro brings Moses' wife Zipporah and their sons Gershom and Eliezer to meet up with the Israelites, and Moses is psyched to see them. He bows to Yitro and kisses him, and they catch up a little. Yitro is the high priest of Midian, and he's very impressed with everything that God has done for Israel and makes a sacrifice and partakes in the sacrificial meal with the Israelite priests. So, about that bickering, Moses is taking on way too much, arbitrating all of the disputes between the people, and Yitro is like, hey, that's way too much. Moses, why don't you have a whole hierarchical system of judges so that you can delegate the minutiae and only have to deal with the really important stuff? Hey, good idea, Yitro. Suddenly, we've arrived at Horeb, the mountain of God, also called Sinai after that burning bush that Moses talked to that one time. Anyway, Moses climbs up the mountain and talks to God, and God says, do what I say, and the people all respond, we'll do what you say. I'm sure that will last a long time. So anyway, there's a bunch of loud, scary noises coming from the mountain, and the people are told to stay back. So what else are they told to do? Well, there are 10 things. Let's call them 10 commandments. 1, I am God. 2, nobody else is God. 3, don't disrespect God. 4, remember that Saturday exists. 5, be nice to your parents. 6, don't murder. 7, only have sex with the people with whom you're supposed to have sex with. 8, don't take stuff that's not yours. 9, don't lie in court. 10, don't want stuff that isn't yours. And yeah, that's Parashat Yitro.
There's a lot going on in this parasha. Like, here I am, you know, I've read it a million times and still processing it all. I can't imagine, you know, experiencing it at the mountain and trying to take all of that in.
So I think that that's like a really interesting point, that we have this moment at the mountain of there's really big sounds and really big clouds of light and fire and darkness, and it's got to be overwhelming, right? That there's so much going on. There's, you know, for those of us who experience that kind of sensory overload, this had to be a terrible moment. And even for those who don't have those kinds of problems, it's still overwhelming, just the amount of stuff and power that's going on in these moments.
Yeah, I mean, we have one of the Midrashim teaches us that, you know, the people couldn't handle the voice of God after one or two commandments, and Moses had to take over for them. So I can imagine that the overwhelmingness of that moment, even not just the loudness and the overstimulation, but just the immensity of that moment, hearing God's voice, could be a really, truly terrifying thing. And I'm actually reminded of a second midrash that all of nature stood still, that there's this moment of quiet after the revelation has happened, that the world stands still, that all of creation, all that is bore witness to human creation and everything that's come before also just stops. And in that, you know, I'm reminded of the still small voice, right? That we need both, that there's this contrast between the thundering and the still small voice, and that Judaism lives in those contrasts. And right from this foundational moment, what exactly happened at Mount Sinai and what we received, different question, but it's a foundational moment of relationship with God. And you need both modalities. You need that big show-stopping moment. We talked about being musical theater fans, but you also need those quiet, introspective moments together to process.
And, you know, that's also reflected in the name of the mountain itself. We have two names for this mountain. We have Mount Horeb, which is literally the mountain of destruction, or the mountain of the sword, or, you know, this violent thing, this mountain of God that is a destructive, violent force. but we also have Mount Sinai after the sneh, after the bush, the little thicket that was on fire in the middle of the wilderness. So you have that duality reflected in the mountain itself. It's interesting how we name things and how those names can kind of imbue meaning both separately, but also, you know, in conjunction with the stories we tell about those places.
Yeah, it's funny that I hadn't really made that connection to the sneh. And, you know, the sneh is this thing that Moses almost doesn't notice. Like, he sort of walks by and could have passed by it and none of this would have ever happened. And I always think of Mount Sinai from the name of Sinai, not the Horeb piece. I sort of conveniently don't think about that name because I love the idea of the small, unassuming mountain, this little Mount Sinai, you know, the story that all the other mountains were asked and they all wanted it and they all vied for it. They're like, oh, me, I'm a big, important mountain. I have the most snow. I'm the tallest. And Mount Sinai is like, I'm just a mountain. And again, there's just this big show-stopping moment on what could be perceived as a small, humble place. And the humility that I think is necessary for receiving Torah and receiving this relationship is sort of buried in there for me.
I feel like we could talk about just the mountain for a very long time, but we do have a mountain of other content to cover. So with that, let's get on to our next section.
Rabbi Sisi, we're so stoked that you're here, and especially your sense of humor, your warmth, and truly just the joy that you bring to your job is something that's really neat when you think about Yitro coming in as a guide who's been really joyous in the job that he's been dealt his whole life. And it's trying to show Moses, you know, how his job also can be dealt with in a way that it becomes more of a joy than a job, than a difficult kind of thing to endure. And so what I want to know is, how did you get into this work? What inspires you to do the work that you're doing? And what gets you excited to go out and spread the joy either of Judaism or even in Judaism or maybe even through Judaism?
Wow. Thank you for that question, Amanda. Thank you for using the word joy to just start us off with. I started, as you know, I was a lawyer before I was a rabbi. And the short version of the long apocryphal tale of how I ended up here was I was at a bar mitzvah for my husband's father's second cousin's stepson, a kid I had never met. And I saw the rabbi giving the charge and I saw this moment of connection and joy. There was clearly a relationship between that rabbi and that bar mitzvah. And I said, that's where I need to be. I need to be in that moment, creating these moments of joy and connection. I've been called by Elisa and Rick Recht a spiritual cheerleader. I consider myself a purveyor of joyful Judaism, that I believe that what we need to do is go out there, and my advice for, or what I can take from Yitro is this idea of work is hard, life is hard. The old sort of Buddhist saying about pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional, that we have within our power methodologies and tools, and in Judaism, tools and methodologies and modalities for bringing joy and supporting each other through the times that are hard. And, you know, I'm reminded of, I like to talk about joyful Judaism and bringing a life and an energy and a passion to what we do. And I'm reminded of Alan Liu's quote that, you know, joy is any emotion or any feeling that is truly felt. So for me, of course, I mean that we should approach our Judaism with love and with connection and with an eye towards a positivity, you know, the hope that Miriam, who brought a timbrel with her into the wilderness when they barely had time to, you know, this is our last week's Parsha, but I always wondered, like, they had to have their staff in their hand and their shoes on their feet, and they had to grab them bread before it was fully bread. And she remembers to bring a timbrel, right? What's that all about? She grabs the musical instruments, right? That doesn't seem logical. But in that moment, there's this sense of, like, bringing your joy and your hope and knowing that there will always be cause for celebration and feeling truly. So, yeah, I got lost.
No, but you're in a good place. And I have two things that I want to mention. The first is I want to build off of this, like, Miriam's carrying with her the timbrel. Like, where, what, why, what? You couldn't wait for the bread to rise, but you had time to grab your musical instrument? Like, what are you doing? And Rabbi Ari Goldstein, our guest for Parashat Bo, talked about this a couple weeks ago. They had time to exhume the bones of Joseph that we're carrying with us, among other things, bread that's not really bread, music, and the bones of our ancestors. Like, those are the things we take with us. Like, you know, it's the weirdest answer to the you're trapped on a deserted island and you get to bring three things with you. Apparently, we're bringing bones, we're bringing music, and we're bringing bread that's not really bread. It's interesting. It's a weird list of priorities.
I mean, isn't that Judaism in a nutshell right there, right? You've got the weird bread, you've got, like, the weight of your tradition, your ancestors are literally with you, and don't forget to sing and enjoy the moment, too.
So that's, like, funny. It's like, that could be a joke, but also it's a serious thing. But here's the other thing, and I think that this is interesting, is that you, in your first answer, referenced a Buddhist teaching, and we're talking about Parashat Yitro, which is named after a guy who is a priest, not an Israelite priest. He's a priest of Midian. So, A, what? But B, how do we balance that, you know, taking the tradition with us, carrying the bones of our ancestors, carrying the music of our tradition with, but also we can learn from this Buddhist teaching. And also, like, here's this guy Yitro, who's not one of our people, but he's got some good ideas and we're going to listen to him too. How do we incorporate the world around us while still carrying, you know, the bones and the timbrels?
Yeah, I think we learn a lot in this parsha around this mountain, right? We start with, as you said, with Yitro, who gives really good advice to bringing and finding joy in your work, right? That's the first part of what Amanda was asking me about that I forgot about, that there's this idea that, you know, Yitro, we borrow from other traditions and we are only enriched by them. And he comes in, you know, we think about this. Moses is new to this job, right? He wanted to be with sheep and he wanted to sort of be away from the people. And I'm imagining, you know, Yitro singing for him to look at his life through heaven's eyes, which I know is one of your favorites, the documentary, the Prince of Egypt, that this moment that Yitro has experience and he has what to teach. And one of the things that I love about Yitro as someone who is a leader is that I don't have to do it all. And Yitro takes the wisdom he has of his experience and teaches Moses how to then take Moses's experience and expertise and teach it to others and share it with others. And so, like that moment later on, the whole message of this parasha is one of living as your individual self, but in community. And so that means that you're going to learn from each other, right? We each heard the Torah we needed to hear at the mountain. We heard it the way we needed to hear it. And for some, that Torah may come from someone like Yitro, who is outside of, well, in this case, the tribe and the family in some way, but is welcome into the family for his wisdom and for who he is, the way that he is. So to me, this whole message is one of finding your truth, finding your relationship with something greater than yourself, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the KBH, you know, making that relationship live in a way that speaks to you. And that's why we each had a different experience at the mountain. And that's why we all heard different Torah. And that's why the Midrash teaches us that all of us were there, subsequent generations included, so that we could have that experience and be a part of the story ourselves and pick up from whatever part of the mountainside we were on and the people that we find ourselves around. We're not supposed to do it alone. We're supposed to do it in community.
So I've always loved this idea that Yitro, when he comes in, it doesn't go immediately to be like, let's talk business. Let's get down to like these brass tacks. Maybe because brass tacks didn't exist then, I don't really know. But generally, you know, comes in and asks after your welfare. Like, it's really about the relationship, right? And I find it fascinating because before he tells Moses, that what he thinks Moses is doing isn't correct, right? Before he comes at Moses and is like, look, like this thing that you're doing, like it's really not good for you. He actually goes off with Aaron and all the elders of Israel to eat, right? Like to partake of a meal before God. And thinking about that community, that Yitro like walked off with a priestly community, it makes you wonder what they said to him at dinner that he came the next day to Moses and said, hey, buddy, this thing, it's not so good for you. But Yitro like brought himself into this community with an insider-outsider perspective and then was really able to use that perspective to help guide to the next step. And so, you know, Cece, you're really involved in a lot of incredible avenues to get involved in community, you know, whether it's music, whether it's dancing, whether it's camp, whether it's creating, you know, the Neshama, like kind of cool meditative service. And so if you're feeling like an outsider in these moments, how might you suggest that people could start feeling a little bit more able to take a step towards the inside?
You know, even if you don't know all the steps, you just do the dance, right? That's the moment. You know, I once wrote on Facebook as an Irish dancer, you know, Jewish Irish dancer who's in rabbinical school doing Irish dance, that I'm a Golda surrounded by Granyas, right? That I stick out a little bit, but that's okay, right? That to sort of own who you are and what makes you unique as a person and even a little bit of an outsider, and observe, watch the dance, and jump right in. You may not get it right, but you start dancing along and maybe the dance changes because you were involved in it. So I think my advice there is, you know, if you're on the outside, become part of the inside. Just be open to the experience and people welcome you in if you have a little courage.
In the words of Yitro, and though you'll never know all the steps, you must learn to join the dance. I love that movie so much. I could talk about it for hours. It's the topic of my thesis. And you know what? No disrespect to Cecil DeMille's The Ten Commandments, which, you know, totally legitimate film. But, you know, it's not as good. It's just not. What is interesting, though, is that this Torah portion contains not only the advice of Yitro, but also the Ten Commandments. The first time we get the Ten Commandments, we'll get them again later, but we get the Ten Commandments here. And that seems to be a pretty big deal. So I'm curious, we've just come through the sea. We've just made it from slavery in Egypt to freedom of the wilderness. First thing we do is Moses needs to establish a judicial system, and then we get the Ten Commandments. As much as we've been focusing on joy, that doesn't seem super fun to me. How do we find joy in, you know, the judiciary and the commandments? Like, where is the joy here?
I'm glad you asked. Because I see, you know, people often ask what happened at Mount Sinai. Were the Ten Commandments given? Were there other laws given? Was it the whole Torah? And in the spirit of my teacher, Rabbi Neil Gilman, Zichrono Livracha, I don't really care, or I'm not as concerned with, I don't want to say I don't care, but I'm less concerned with what was given at Sinai and more that there was an entering into relationship with the Holy One at that moment. That the semantics of what happened, Neil Gilman would have said, it's a two-dimensional record of a three-dimensional experience. That as human beings, we're just never going to get the full picture because it was a divine encounter and we're incapable of really fully understanding that encounter. But what is important is that we entered into this relationship. That the Torah is the legally binding document that sort of solidifies and seals that relationship, but the details are for later, that it's really about that moment, right? That it's like the Hillel on one foot thing, that the point is you're in relationship with God, the rest is stuff you'll learn about later. So to me, that's where the joy lies, is that we've gone through this whole experience, right? We've come through this exodus, we've come through this birth as a people, moving from a family into a peoplehood, and into that moment, we're now just starting this relationship with God. God. And the part of the joy is that it's a list of rules, or at least guideposts, whether it's the Ten Commandments or the whole Torah. It's guideposts for living in that relationship and living as this reflection of God, this creation of God, and putting godliness out there, right? The first two or three commandments, depending how you number them, are about God. And then from there, it's about recognizing your attitude of gratitude, recognizing not to want things you don't have, recognizing to be nice to other people. They're guidelines and principles for living in that relationship with God.
All right. So I have a question that doesn't deal with joy, but does deal with a little bit of minutiae. I have to tell you, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. So friends like to make fun of me a little bit because I have a saying a lot that patience is a virtue, and I realize that patience is a virtue, and I also recognize it's just not one of mine. And in this particular portion, there's a lot of time that goes by, and God gives the people time to prepare, right, before God comes up the mountain. There are 3 days. And I have to tell you, as a soon-to-be rabbi, you know, and I'm excited about it and nervous about it, and it'll be an entertaining adventure. The idea of like trying to figure out how I'm going to prepare for 3 days to do something when I feel like I have no patience. I just want to like get there. You know, how do I balance that? How do we balance our need for speed these days? Like our need to constantly be on the receiving of information to being able to take a step back and maybe even allow ourselves to enjoy the message we're getting, to like go through the process, to actually embrace it and make it our own versus speeding through it.
If I knew the answer to that, I'd retire, because I'm with you on this. I'm definitely not a patient person. I'm not good at sitting. I'd rather do, you know, yoga or a movement rather than sitting and meditating. So I'm not really sure. But to, you know, to borrow from another tradition, one of my favorite singer-songwriters is Carrie Newcomer, who is a Quaker. And she has this idea of traveling at the speed of your soul and never going faster than your guardian angel can go. But I love this idea of going, traveling at the speed of your soul. And I think that those 3 days to prepare for this divine encounter are supposed to be hard. It's supposed to slow us down, so that we can connect and be at the speed of soul, because this is a moment of soul connection. This is a moment of divine relationship, and we shouldn't rush into that. And I think it's because we are human, and who knows us better as humans than the one who created us, we need that slowdown. And we need to breathe, and we need to listen for the still small voice, because we are so, you know, as I strive right now even to fill silence with voice and with words and with what I know to be comfortable, the sound of my voice and the words that I can speak, I need to listen more, and I need to hear the message more, and I need to be in touch with my own soul and my own heartbeat. And that might take me more than 3 days.
I'm thinking of a verse in this week's Torah portion in Yitro, Exodus chapter 19, verse 6, where God says to the people, you should be to me, you will be to me, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. That's a pretty big ask. And it's not even an ask. It's not a like, hey, you should try really hard to, you know, be good people. This is a, you're going to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. That's a big charge. And as much as I want to be able to, you know, go with the speed of my soul, that's a big push forward. How do we square those things?
You know, shoot for the moon. Even if you fail, you'll land among the stars, sort of aspirational thinking. Right. I always think about the idea of we pray the God we want to exist into existence. Right. We say a lot of things about God that sometimes we don't always believe to be true. Right. If you say at the end of Birkat HaMazon, the grace after meals, that I made it to old age and never saw a righteous person forsaken, I'm not sure that the author of that particular blessing really made it into old age and never saw a righteous person forsaken. What I see that as a moment of saying, this is the world I want to be. I want to be in a world where the righteous are not forsaken. And so I think this is an example of God doing that, that God is saying, you might not be there yet, but this is who you can be. This is a big ask, but I want you to, it's a reach. This is a reach goal. And I think you can do it.
I really appreciate the idea of a reach goal, and also kind of in that way, somehow making it individual, making it personal. And so because I'm a big believer of translating Torah into our own terms and our own time, this is just a fun question, but I'm always interested about it, which is in this portion, especially throughout Exodus 19, we constantly have the word kol. We constantly have the word, you know, kuf vav lamed, kol. And I would translate that for our listeners, but people argue about what the word means. And so, Rabbi Sisi, as a musician, as a dancer, as a rabbi, as somebody who I feel like could really make some music with this word kol, what do you think in terms of our reach goals or in terms of our understanding that this word might read like or sound like or feel like to you?
Ah, Ilana Arian's song just popped into my head. I have a voice. My voice is powerful. My voice can change the world. To me, voice can be you. It's your neshama. It's the impact you have on this world, whether it is through a literal voice or all of those methodologies and modalities that you use as a human being, as a Jew, as a leader in this world to get out your message. That is your voice. How you move in this world is your voice.
So one of the things that we love to do on this podcast is help people get out their message. We love to be a platform. So if you had one message, one thought, one call to action, one piece of wisdom that you wanted to leave listeners with, one call, what would that be?
Ivdu et Adonai b'simcha. Serve the Holy One with joy, with your full passion, with your full voice, with an attitude of gratitude. Be fully yourself, and the rest will follow. That you are a vessel of holiness, or a blob of godness, as I once called it to one of my bar mitzvah kids. You're a blob of kedusha out there in the world. Go out there and serve God with your truth and your joy, and the rest will follow.
So Amanda and I were talking earlier about the thick cloud in which God will descend upon Mount Sinai and talk to the people from this like mysterious, ominous, dark cloud. And, you know, it really got me thinking. So in honor of that cloud, of the light, of the loud noises that are coming off of that mountain, I'm very proud to present for this week's segment of Midrashic Mixology, the Sparkling Sinai. Moses needs to spread out responsibility. So instead of having just one really busy judge, he can have lots of judges with shorter dockets. So take a strawberry and cut it into quarters and then put them into a rocks glass. Add in a lemon wheel for Yitro and muddle it all together to release those flavors. Say a quick Shabbat Kiddush and add in 3 ounces of a sparkling rosé and a 1/2 ounce of simple syrup for some sweetness. For those of you making a non-alcoholic cocktail, use white grape juice instead of the rosé. Either way, cool things down by stirring it all together with ice. To finish off this cocktail, we're honoring the ominously dark cloud that covered the top of the mountain by floating on 1 ounce of Pinot Noir or pomegranate juice. Where are we again? We're at Mount Sinai, the place where Moses saw the burning bush that one time. So garnish with a couple of mint leaves and enjoy. L'chaim.
Ugh, I love it. I love the heaviness and the ominousness put together with the sweetness. That is the revelation experience in a glass. It's perfect. And I love that it sparkles.
The revelation experience in a glass is going to be our new tagline. I'm just putting that out there. That's just what I want on everything from now on.
I think that the vessel in which you do your mixology going forward needs to have that in the glass etching.
On it. We're on it.
Awesome.
Before we go into our last section, thank yous and closing cues, during a break, Cece, you were talking to us about your experience on the Star Wars Galactic Cruiser. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, well, it was more about the revelation moment, my Star Wars. So, right, like we talk about, I love the idea of play, right? That's the other piece that I love in like Jewish experience, is that experiencing it is the point. So we recently went on the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser experience, which is amazing. And all of the advertising material for it and the marketing material talks about being a part of your own Star Wars story. And I always think of that in terms of how we view the Exodus and the Revelation experience, right? It's as if we were at Mount Sinai. We're not supposed to read it as if, oh, our ancestors were there and it's a story that we read about that happened. No, we're supposed to experience it as if we were there because we were there. And so I just went on this amazing, amazing experience. I could talk about that forever. Also, in addition to talking about the Prince of Egypt forever, I could talk about the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser forever. But there's this idea that you're supposed to be a part of the story and play along and interact with it, right? You go up to the characters in this Star Cruiser experience and you talk to them. I won't give any spoilers, but it's phenomenal. You are a character in the story, and that's Judaism, right? We're not supposed to sit back and be like, this revelation thing happened and the Torah was given and the Jewish people entered into this relationship and contract with the divine. No, it's us, you and I, we all four of us were there and we are part of the story and we live our Judaism as an expression of our own story. That I heard the Torah I needed to hear, right? All of those commandments, everything is in the, when you were talking to me before about kol, I was thinking about Kaf Lamed and Kol being all, that we often think about Jewish experience as the communal experience, but all of these commandments are in the singular. And it's because we're all supposed to experience it in our own way and tell it and be a part of our own Jewish revelation story. And so I love that. I love that we're supposed to do it in community. We're all together. And part of the challenge, right, post-COVID is finding ways to get back into that community and reinvigorating our communities, because we're not supposed to do Judaism alone, but we're supposed to leave room for each of us to be a part of the story in our own way and experience our Judaism in our way.
So I don't really know how she did this, because Cece's not actually like an official member of the Drinking and Drashing team, but somehow she managed to magically segue into our closing cue for our last section, which is pretty impressive if you think about it. And so Cece, Idan, Gabe, and Yitro, we are actually really instructed to be able to rely on our communities, on each other, on other people to ensure that we're sharing and or receiving a clear and meaningful message. Whether it's by Moshe, by God, by commandments, by our leaders, by ourselves even. So what are some ways that we can help each other in either sharing or receiving a meaningful message? Cece, we'll start with you.
Share your truth and your joy and your passion with other people, but also take those moments of still small quiet to hear theirs. Because only when we then, you know, get our chocolate in each other's peanut butter and each other's peanut butter in each other's chocolate, do we then learn and grow and make something even more beautiful. So you heard a song you love, share it. You heard a quote that really inspired you, blog about it. You heard a podcast that really, really meant something to you, share it with your friends. Just make those moments of sharing happen and be open to hearing what other people share with you.
We're really grateful for what you've shared with us today. Gabe, what do you think, as somebody who often plays, you know, Shaliach Tzibor, as somebody who leads a community in making sure that they really get the message, what advice do you have for us today?
You know, one of the verses that's kind of been echoing in my head, you know, throughout this whole conversation, particularly the parts of the conversation where we were talking about Mount Sinai and God speaking through the cloud on Sinai, this verse from Psalm 99 from our Kabbalat Shabbat liturgy has been echoing in my head. This verse, Be'amud Anan Yidaber Alehem Shamru Edotav V'chok Natan Lamo. He spoke, God spoke in a pillar of cloud, and they obeyed God's decrees, the law that God gave to them. And that's a weird verse, right? Like, that's a weird thing to think about, that we're hearing the voice of God through a cloud, and we say, yes, this is what we're going to do. We're going to agree to what you said, and we're going to obey everything you say. And then only two verses later in this psalm, we have probably the most well-known verse of this psalm, Romimu Adonai Eloheinu, exalt, sing to God. So for me, I think it comes in two parts, right? It's this recognition that, like, no, we're not always going to get it right. We're not always going to be able to obey everything that we're told to do. We're not always going to remember the law perfectly. We're not always going to be our best selves. And yet we always have to be turning our hearts toward, that holy mountain. We have to be turning our hearts toward God, and we have to be, singing out. We have to be loud about it. So I'm going to go back to what Rabbi Sisi said of, like, if you're feeling something, share it. And for me, that comes out in song. That comes out in Kabbalat Shabbat, Romimu, let's go.
Amazing. Thanks for lifting that up for us, raising that high. Idan, what say you, my friend, as somebody who is often an incredible listener and, like, really tries to make sure that the message gets out, but also, like, sometimes gets heard beautifully? What advice do you have for us today?
It all starts with respect, right? I think of the quote that Sisi used of Narayiti Gamzakanti, Velo Rayiti Tzadik Nezav. I've been young, I've grown older, I've not seen the righteous man forsaken. I knew the quote was mentioned. I couldn't remember it word for word. So I'm literally using my wedding venture. All we can really do is respect one another, not forsake each other, and really treat each other as righteous, and assume that everything anyone will say will be righteous.
Yeah, I think, and that goes back to that line that Gabe was talking about earlier, to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. It's a reach goal, but I don't think we're meant to fail. I think anything that we do, to do what Idan just said, to take good care of each other in community and really be kind, that is what that means. And I think it's really empowering to know that we live in relationship with the Holy One, that God reached out and said, I want you to be my people. I want to be in relationship with you. Go out and be who you are and take care of each other while you do it.
I don't know that I have much else to add. I mean, I'm surrounded by a lot of wise Yitros in this moment, and I appreciate that. I don't know if it'd be Yitraot, Yitroim. Somebody will correct me. I'm sure one of our listeners will correct me. But I will say I'm really appreciative to maybe that'll be my advice is when you're listening, try to come at it from a place of appreciation. Even if you don't agree with somebody, you can at least appreciate what they're saying or appreciate the place that they're coming from. And I think that's been really important. And I just want to say, I'm really grateful to be with this team of people tonight, discussing this. As I said, this portion is not an easy one. There's a lot of ups and downs, and not just because there's a mountain. I've already been made fun of a little bit because I made a joke before about a call to action. There's a lot of, voices and sounds and things that are propelling us forward that are scary. And, there's a lot of resistance to change sometimes, and also a lot of excitement when change is abounding us. And I have to say, I'm incredibly grateful to be able to be on this podcast and hopefully get out meaningful messages that move people and inspire people to take action and to really uplift their own voices. And so, Sisi, I have to say, thank you so much for being here today. I'm really grateful and I'm really enjoying the conversation. And if other people want to be able to continue these conversations with you, how might they be able to best find or follow you?
Yeah, I'd love to talk. I'd love to talk about Torah, Star Wars, anything in between. I'm Rabbi Cece pretty much everywhere. That's C-E-C-E. So RabbiCece.com, Rabbi Cece on Twitter, Rabbi Cece on Snapchat. I think I'm still there. On Instagram, everywhere you can find me. Just find Rabbi Cece.
Amazing. And we did make you this promise that we would end by saying, hey, Rabbi Cece, any last thoughts, words, concerns, or jokes?
I'm so glad you asked. Two nuclei are walking down the street. One turns to his friend and says, oh no, I've lost an electron. He says, are you sure? He says, oh, I'm positive.
I laughed. I've heard it before. I still think it's funny.
We don't get a lot of science on this podcast. Like, it doesn't come up often. I think that was the most science-y we've gotten in a long time.
Usually we have a pretty good separation of church and state.
Oh my goodness. All right, on that note, thank you, Cece, for your incredible wit and wisdom and humor today. It's been fantastic. Thank you so much, Gabe, for just running us down with your incredible distilled Parsha summary, and also for building us back up, you know, for the long climb ahead with your incredible Midrashic mixology. Thanks, Idan, for bringing on such an awesome guest. This is super fun. And also, as always, it's just a pleasure to be in the same Zoom room with you. And thanks to all our listeners for, you know, checking us out. We're always excited to be with you on the air. And of course, I can't forget. I almost did, but don't worry. I got you. Thanks, Mike, for editing us and making us sound so beautiful today. We're so excited to have you on the team as well. Stay tuned for our conclusion coming at you soon. Hey, Gabe.
Hey, Amanda.
You know, I have to tell you, there's something really beautiful about introducing joy and process, even a moment of kind of doubt and fear and uncertainty. And I think that this portion has a lot of balance and imbalance, right? So for people that don't know, I'm not afraid of heights. I've never been afraid of heights. Gabe knows this. I'm able to kind of be at the top of any mountain. I've gone skiing my whole life. You know, I'm able to go on a chairlift. That's not my issue. I have a great fear of instability. And this portion reminds me of kind of a lot of teetering, right? Like a lot of instability, because Yitro kind of says, like, look, this system that you have, like, it's unstable. It's not going to last. You have to be able to find some supports. And then in the very next chapter, Moses is kind of thrown in by the Israelites, who are like, please talk to God for us. Like, we're a little too afraid to do this with you. Like, do it on your own. Like, you know, we'll do what God says, but do this part on your own. And so I appreciate Rabbi Cece saying, like, there's joy to be found even in these moments of doubt or uncertainty, because there's something about the process that helps us get to the progress, that helps us get to where we want to be or need to be.
It's helpful to remember that this story is, it's not just our, you know, ethical narrative. It's our foundational national narrative. This is how we came about. And so in addition to, you know, figuring out how to live in right relation with each other and with God and with the land, and we're also figuring out how to have a system of community, how to be a people, how to be a nation. Sometimes that's the really talkless stuff, right? That's the, you know, how do we arbitrate disputes? That's something we need to figure out as a people. How do we deal with each other? What I think is really interesting, though, is that in this very same Torah portion, we go from that very simple base level, like, how do we interact with each other? How do we create a society? To how do we talk to God? Like, that's a really big range there, right? Like, that's 0 to 60 really fast. I really am thinking about, you know, Sinai as something we all experience, not just in terms of our history, but as Rabbi Cece said, right? This is something that we're supposed to think of as being our own personal narratives, that we each see ourselves at Sinai. And I think that's a complicated thing, right?
I mean, sure. So I think that one of the things that we're holding, you know, in one hand, and maybe two things that we're holding in one hand, is that we have our personal experience as if we're supposed to be there, but also we have our communal experience, right? That this is our people and we're part of a story of a collective narrative and a collective history. And like each of us can be at the same place and interpret that differently. And so we might hear that coal, right? That voice, that blare, that sound, that insert definition here, differently than our neighbor who is standing right next to us, or differently than, you know, the 5-year-old child who is kind of crawling, playing around like near the mountain, but won't touch the mountain. And I think that even in this day and age, when we have a message that we're trying to get out, right, say like on a podcast, people will hear us differently based on where they are in the moment that they're listening. And that's just normal, right? We are who we are. And the way that we read Torah is how we show up to the Torah in the moment. You know, what's happening in our lives impacts our understanding of our tradition and how we can use it, how it can become tangible, how we can actually take hold of it. And I think that that's really important. Listen, I taught recently that the morning blessings, there's a group of blessings called Birkot HaShachar, the morning blessings, or if you're Reform, sometimes they call them Nisan Bechol Yom, the everyday miracles. And what's cool about them is there are 14 of them that we read in the morning at a morning service. And I taught my kids, there's a cool thing that 14 is also akin to the word Yad, because Yud is 10 and Dalet is 4. And 10 plus 4 is 14. So Yad, this idea that you can have these 14 blessings in hand. The cool thing about Revelation, the cool thing about this podcast, is we take these things, we take these stories and these moments that seem so out of reach, right? Such a big range. And we help bring them into our hands. We help allow our listeners to hold on to them. And hey, I mean, Revelation in a glass, like that's exciting. You know, I know I messed up the sentence, but I'm okay. We're going to keep this in because that's how I heard it in this moment. And you may hear it differently because that wasn't exactly what she said. And I know what word I missed, but don't worry about it because you'll see it on our merch coming up in our store soon. By the way, do you love shopping? Because we love giving you special merchandise to order. So if you are interested in buying new things from Drinking and Drashing, Torah with a Twist, head to drinkinganddrashing.com and click store. Also, thanks for listening in. We always have enjoyed having you with us at our Mount Sinai, you know, in this special passion podcasting project. We hope that you will continue to listen in. If you have feedback, feel free to send us an email at drinkinganddrashing@gmail.com. Head to our website, come visit us. And hey, if you're interested in helping uplift your voice, shoot us a message. We're always interested in reaching out and making community with all of you. For now, we raise our glass and we invite you to maybe check out our new glasses at drinkinganddrashing.com. And we say to you, L'chaim.
L'chaim.
And Slancha.
Nice.
Hi, I'm Rabbi Cece, and you're listening to Drinking and Drashing, Torah with a Twist. And timbrel or thimble, we're all gonna dance and have a good time.